Ed Lefroy, who is a director of the Centre for Environment at the University of Tasmania, and has a really fascinating kind of a provocation for you this morning. Hello, Ted.
Morning, Rick.
Very nice to have you in. Now, look, I'm always fascinated by the journey of ideas, how ideas emerge, which ones take hold and which ones don't. And sometimes ideas take hold that we all take for granted, and then they're completely refuted by science, but no one notices the refutation, and we all carry on as if it's true.
True.
And this is the story of this idea of the commons.
It is. It is. There was a very influential paper published in the journal Science in 1968 called The Tragedy of the Commons. And the title alone is probably what a lot of people have heard, and it just seems to make perfect sense. Garrett Hardin was at the time the president of the Ecological Society of America, and this was his presidential address in that year. So it's effectively an opinion piece in this magazine, Science magazine. And he argued from first principles that if a natural resource is held in common by a group of people, grazing land, fishery, forestry, irrigation water, it will inevitably be degraded. And it's a very convincing argument. It's an economic argument. And there's one point in the article where he actually says, in a society that believes in the freedom of the commons, ruin is the destination to which all men rush, each pursuing his own best interest.
And it was so influential. It has influenced so many thinkers, but also policymakers and decision makers.
It has, and I think it's also
become true.
Yeah, and it's also a product of its time. If you think 1968, it's the height of the Cold War. The two big ideas fighting themselves out were free market capitalism and communism, and I think people were then making decisions based partly on the political environment in which they lived.
And also, I suppose, I'm seeing what was happening in the Soviet Union, which was allegedly communal, but not working economically effectively.
No. That's right. And I think what was interesting is that someone read it and wondered, this is all first principles. There's no evidence here. There's no empirical evidence. There are no facts. I wonder if it's true. And this was a young economist called Eleanor Ostrom. And she then spent about 20 years with her students studying examples of common pool resources, as they're called, all over the world. So fisheries in Mexico, forestry in Nepal, irrigation systems, old and new, saying, is it true? And if it's, and when she discovered there were some instances where these common pool resources had been effectively managed for up to 1,000 years. There's one irrigation system that I've had the privilege of visiting in Oman, called the Falaj, where people have allocated water in these very dry, arid parts of Oman. They tap into springs in the mountain and run irrigation channels, and that's been running effectively for 1,000 years. And what she did is realize that there were many examples where it did work, and she published a paper in Science in 2009, the same journal, just laying out what were the characteristics where it did work. And in the same year, she was awarded a Nobel Prize in economics.
But it didn't have the same influence in terms of everyone's general thinking. It's 20 to 7 on 936 ABC Hobart. Professor Ted Lefroy is Director of the Centre for Environment at the University of Tasmania. And we're looking at some pretty big ideas, but they have a really local story. The 1968 paper, The Tragedy of the Commons, which is this idea that anything held in common by a group of people eventually will be degraded and led to ruin because we're innately selfish. And this was, in fact, overturned in 2009. But it doesn't take hold. It's a bit like economic rationalism. That's an idea that's been pretty much kicked out nearly 10 to 15 years ago, but people still base policy on the idea that anyone behaves rationally with their own economic decisions.
Yeah, some ideas are very sticky, aren't they?
They are very sticky indeed.
Yeah.
So now you've seen some examples in Tasmania of people using commons in irrigation, not maybe for 1,000 years like Oman, but that's actually working.
Yeah, there's a very good homegrown example in the Ringarooma catchment. And it's one that was initiated by the irrigators themselves. So there's about 70 irrigators in the catchment. And one of the risks they run is if river levels get low, especially at a critical time of the year when the crops are finishing, the water manager, the Department of Primary Industries, can issue a cease to take order. So once there's an agreed level, and once the river the flow drop below that, and you can imagine the implications on finishing a crop on people's incomes have ceased to take order. So what a group of those irrigators did is build some on-farm storages. Now, you can take water in winter and store it, but then when they see evidence that it might be getting close, this cease to take and irrigation and water levels are low, they released water to the benefit of everybody. So they took it on upon themselves to build this buffer and then release it. And this interested some researchers at the university. So there's a project called SenseT, which is using sensor technology to improve management of all sorts of things in health, in agriculture, fisheries. So now they're working with them to improve the quality and timeliness of information about water flow. And what they're building is what they call a dashboard that'll be available on a mobile phone that tells you as close to real time what the flow is in the water in lots of places down the river. So they've got much better information to go on.
So, Ted, what are the circumstances then when Commons works? Because usually with these things, it's about scale.
Yeah.
At this size, it's a disaster, but at this size, it's brilliant.
And you're spot on. That was one. Eleanor Ostrom came up with about 10 factors that were in common where these common pool resources had been well managed. One was having a clear boundary. You had to know where this commons stopped, and you had to know who had a share in it, the number of people who had a share. You had to have some idea of how productive it was, so how much there was to share around.
Do you need to know the people who have a share in it personally?
No, but you just need to know how many there are. Another one is you need a set of rules as to how it's going to be shared, and you need some form of sanction and dispute resolution. So those were common in all these cases. Another factor was leadership and entrepreneurship. So things change, circumstances change. You have a very dry year, a wet year, something happens. You've got to have the flexibility that you know how to interpret those rules, because nature is variable, and if you just have a rigid system, it's not going to work. And that's exactly what's playing out in the Ringarooma. And with the advantage of this better real-time information, there's every chance that their management will be even more finessed and much closer so that they can manage that resource even better.
And you'd hope all the people then feel that they have the same information. So it's not Max over here saying, yeah, I reckon with a dry winter we need to do this, and then Jim saying, I don't know. And, you know, you can get conflict. You go, right, well, we've got the same information.
Exactly. Yep. So this dashboard will soon
could reduce conflict.
Exactly, yeah. And the other interesting thing they're trying is that one bubbled up spontaneously within that catchment. And they're also saying, well, can we see how that worked, and can we try and get the same sort of thing happening in another catchment? So it's a paired study. So one was spontaneous, and the other one they're going to say, how can we introduce the same concepts, the same operating system, where it hasn't appeared spontaneously? So that's the very interesting question.
So to see whether the bottom-up model can be placed in a way top-down and still function and still have its integrity.
Well, it might be a mixture. It might be a mixture of top and bottom. But
so what are... What are some of the implications of this in terms of where else it might be able to be applied, and what difference it might make to people in terms of either, you know, increased profit or increased security of supply?
Well, I think the big example is with irrigation in Tasmania. We are on the cusp of a boom, as you probably know, and not just in irrigation, but in dairying and in sales of milk products into Asia. And there is a big investment, hundreds of millions of dollars, going into new irrigation schemes. The history of irrigation schemes around the world, especially those that are managed centrally or top-down, is not good. If you think of the Murray-Darling Basin, the Murray doesn't actually reach the sea anymore. And what's happened there is highly variable flow. They took an average. They allocated on that basis. They've over-allocated, created false expectations. It's very difficult to then take those allocations back once people have invested in all the infrastructure and the capital. And so we've seen that river system suffer greatly because it's being managed centrally. The idea here is, and it's a fairly novel idea, is that if you gave autonomy to smaller groups that can manage within their own networks, social networks, in smaller catchments and sub-catchments, and you build up a management system on that basis, we could avert the sort of mistakes that were made in the Murray. And the way the irrigation system is being planned here is in smaller lots, not one great big system. So I think there's a very good chance that in Tasmania, a combination of enthusiasm, outside capital, and these sort of ideas of Eleanor Ostrom's could come to play and protect that resource.
You might also be interested to watch on iView a Four Corners show, I think it was just recently, about solar power generation, mostly in the United States, where they're saying instead of centrally controlling your electricity grid, to break it down into a series of mini grids will make it much more robust as more and more people become power generators.
And isn't that interesting? It's happening more and more, isn't it? It's distributed networks where you're giving more autonomy just to smaller groups and individuals rather than thinking that the government or the state is going to manage these things on our behalf at some very big and complex scale.
But they seem to be dependent on our ability to share information so much more quickly now that it makes those things possible.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ted, eye-opening way to start the week. Thanks very much. Professor Ted Lefroy, Director of the Centre for Environment at the University of Tasmania. And if you want to look that paper up, the name of the scientist is Eleanor Ostrom, O-S-T-R-O-M, and it's Nobel Prize-winning work.